Welcome to Water Talks coverage from ACE 19. Broadcasting live from Denver, Colorado. ACE, innovating the future of water. Water Talk is made possible by Water Online, showcasing today's water industry leaders and innovators. And now, here is your host, Todd Schnick.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Water Talk. I am your host, Todd Schnick, joined by my friend and colleague, Bill King. Bill, we have come to the end of our day two coverage at ACE 19. Boy, what a great 2 days it has been.
It has been, and I'm really excited about our next guest. My only wish is actually, instead of the interview we're about to have being at the end of day two, it would have been great to have this kicking off day one, because I think we're going to hear about some industry insights that would really have provided a great background to all the wonderful conversations we've had over the last 2 days.
Boy, I think you're absolutely right. So what? We got him now. We're going to take full advantage of it. Let's get to it. We're joined by Reese Tisdale. He is the president of Bluefield Research. Reese, welcome to the show.
Bill, Todd, good to see you guys again.
Good to see you as well. So take a second, if you don't mind, Reese, and tell the audience a bit about Bluefield Research.
Bluefield Research, you know, it's funny. I think first time I saw you guys was 2014, at least, walking by. We founded the company in 2013. We do market research for the water industry, more broadly, water, wastewater, stormwater, across municipal and industrial sectors. Based in Boston, we provide companies insights on what's happening in the market. We're still here 6 years later.
Congratulations on that.
It's exciting, and clearly walking through the floor yesterday and today, there's still a need.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. Things are good.
Well, fantastic. And so, thanks so much for being here. Let's talk about some of that market research. I understand you have new forecasts on water infrastructure. What trends are you seeing there that's driving spend up or down?
I think what's interesting is the water sector as a whole is what it is. It grows about 2-3% a year. It's go crazy, jump up and down, also drives people a little crazy. But there are segments within that or slices of that pie that are actually pretty exciting. I think at previous conferences or trade shows, we've talked about things like digital water. There continues to be a lot of activity in that space where data and analytics playing a big role. I know you've had other guests on that have talked about whether it be capturing that data through hardware, using software to analyze it, that's an area of interest. Other things I was talking to clients this morning about was the role of emerging contaminants and water quality. We are basically out of water quality or water show, and things like PFAS and algae blooms and, you know, lead is out there. It's an ongoing problem, but back to the PFAS, we are seeing things that, you know, these are emerging contaminants or chemicals that are in our water supplies that are driving a lot of interest, both on the wastewater side, but also on the wastewater as well.
You know, when we started this show, certainly in coverage at ACE, we weren't talking about PFAS and those kinds of things. Are we just getting better detecting some of these emerging contaminants? I mean, what's driving this new discoveries of these new contaminants that then have to result in efforts from the industry to deal with them? Well, how's that happening?
I tell you what's amazing is, you know, we were going through some data today, and this is really simple. Go to Google Trends and look at PFAS. And you can just type in PFAS in Google today, and you can look. And what's amazing is how quickly, just from searches online, people want to know what it is. And I think part of it is studies are coming out. We're starting to come around. These, you know, chemical companies, whether they're liable or not, it's a different matter. But they are being called into question, at least the products. Their regulations coming into place. So there are 9 states that are now starting to implement regulations to monitor and or remediate things like this. So it's really interesting to see that happen. Now, I think historically, you look back, I mean, we've seen things, I mean, is it the same as DDT? They really are, you know, monitoring and regulating new constituents in water for water quality. It doesn't happen very often. In fact, quite honestly, in our lives, it rarely happens. So is this a change? I'd like to think so. The solutions are out there. I think the solutions are on this floor today.
Yes.
So it's not anything crazy to deal with. We just have to deal with it.
Yep. Yeah. It's interesting because I think in this industry, the pace of regulation has always been something that has kind of been there. It takes a lot of study to actually formulate new regulation.
Yeah.
Are you seeing the pace of regulation around something like PFAS changing?
I tell you what's interesting about regulation is we do a lot of analysis on things like violations and who are the violators. I mean, obviously, you would think that would be an opportunity. But when it comes to the regulation, is how is it being regulated? And over the past 20 years, what we've seen, not to get too wonky here, but basically, let's talk about the Clean Water Act is a good example. It's almost 50 years since the Clean Water Act. I think we're year 47 of the Clean Water Act. So we're getting towards that. What's interesting is the federal government as a whole, the EPA, should I say, the EPA is basically pushing that regulation down to the states, right? At the same time, while that's happened, the regulations, or the stick, if you will, has really become an informal process where there are no penalties. It's really a discussion or a negotiation of sorts, but informally between violators and the regulators. Say, look, you need to deal with this. You need to get this done. So that's sort of where the trend is happening, and I think that is also a challenge as we see companies, new market entrants trying to get into the space. They keep saying, well, wait a second, we're talking water quality here. There's got to be a stick. We've got algae blooms. Like, aren't people being penalized? When is the wave going to come? I don't know if it's a strange market in that way that you need to understand.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because you look at the European perspective and it's almost the entire difference. Like, it's heavily regulated, and some of the standards that the European utilities have to aspire to.
Yeah.
It's incredibly tight. It really drives a lot of innovation.
I mean, if you look at the UK, it's fully privatized, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got basically your set of utilities, and it's a small group relative to the US. I mean, you're talking, two dozen, if that, in the UK, whereas in the US alone, you're looking at 49,000 water systems, another 18,000 wastewater systems. So it's pretty incredible. But you're exactly right. I mean, in the UK, I mean, the regulator just turns the screws every 5 years, through the AMP cycle, as they call it. They just turn it, and it squeezes down. Is it perfect? I don't think there's no perfect solution out there to any of these problems.
Well, another thing that you are paying close attention to is private investment in water infrastructure. I'm really intrigued to hear what you have to say here. Is it having an impact? It seems like it has exciting potential.
I think it's a discussion that goes on. I mean, I love this stuff, right? And I think it's really interesting. And I'm not an advocate for private investment or ownership in water systems. It is what it is.
Right.
I think we all just want clean water. We want our wastewater treated, and we want to go on with our lives, right? Is a user of the product. The investor in utilities, I think over the past 4 years, we've seen about 517, I'm being really precise, 517 acquisitions that have taken place in the U.S. water market. Last year was 115. Slight downtick, but an ongoing trend that we see happening. But I will say, as I talked about that 49,000 number, 60% of those acquisitions are of are of private systems. But also 78%, so the lion's share, if not definitely the majority, are for small and very small systems. The U.S. has so many small systems that I think Bluefield Research, that is really where the opportunity or really where the need is, right? It may not be, I think they're big dollars there. It's just a lot of dollar bills, right?
Right.
That's the difficulty and the challenge of playing in the space.
I've always thought that when private entities are looking at potentially acquiring a former public entity, when is too small not commercially interesting enough? We talk about I think the real need is there is to purchase out some of these smaller systems that are really struggling to provide that quality of water. But from a private perspective, when did they get too small to be actually commercially interesting?
Well, I think the one way to look at it is you obviously have the 800-pound gorillas. You get the American Waters, the Aquas, the Aqua Americas, the Suezes. They can roll up these tuck-in deals. You know, they have a wide network across a multitude of states that they can roll these smaller systems up. They can pick up trailer parks, you know, 300-person, you know, systems. If you're an outsider looking in, as we like to call them at Bluefield, and there are a lot of them, a lot of companies are out there that are trying to figure out, hey, there's a need, there's an opportunity, how do we get into this space? Hey, you know, Company X, we've got a 500-person system for you. Yeah, it's not worth it. But there are portfolios out there. I mean, I don't know if that's a financial term, you know, or used word, commonly used word, but there are smaller systems that have been rolled up, and, you know, they are getting, I think the financial returns are good, the systems, the question is, are the networks in good condition? Because usually after acquisition, they do require some upkeep. But I think the other part of that is, back to, I think there was a bill you mentioned or asked a question about regulations. There are favorable policies in about 8 or 9 states in the U.S. that are benefiting actually the sellers of these public systems. And the public systems are now getting fair market value for the systems they're selling, which is better than what they've gotten in the past, their appraised values. And so ideally the community is going to get a better deal when they sell a system, because sometimes operating a water system, things are changing. They're new constituent, they're new contaminants. There's climate change, there's aging infrastructure. There are a lot of problems that need to be dealt with. Sometimes, and it costs money. So is your community willing to step up and pay for that or not? They, you know, it depends.
Reese, closing one final discussion here. So I'm curious to know about the result of all your work and all your research, and then frankly, spending 2 days observing what's happening and being set around here at ACE 19. What other key trends are you thinking that we should be paying close attention to that are impacting utility business models?
You got a day?
Well, I said 7:30.
I would say, I think, a couple of things in brief, and that is, we sort of, is a good segue from the IOU discussion, convergence of utility infrastructure. We are seeing IOUs, so whether it be Aqua America has recently, you know, merged or acquired Peoples Gas. We've got NW Natural in the Pacific Northwest. They're a natural gas provider buying water systems. There's a convergence happening, which I think is really exciting. Is that an indirect way, ultimately 10, 20, 25 years, maybe 50, that leads us to the smart city or smarter city, right? It's a way of sort of piggybacking critical infrastructure on top of one another to better understand, because there are synergies, their needs, their common needs, and a reliance on one from the other. I think the other thing that I'm really excited about, and hopefully I haven't brought it up here in the past, is the decentralization of infrastructure. So it's happened to power, electric power to some extent, and I think we're starting to see in water as well, and that is on the commercial industrial side of the business, where these companies are able to basically take matters into their own hands. And then what they start installing their own treatment water systems on site. Maybe not for potable use, but at least for water usage, for cooling or for irrigation. But they're starting to manage their own water budgets, their own water costs. There's a collateral impact or damage, if, I don't know if that's right, where impact is probably a better way to put it, and that is on the utility. If they're a customer of the utility and they're using less water, or they're delivering less discharge to the wastewater facility, there are less revenues for the wastewater facility. So I think that's a really interesting thing that we're seeing. Slight business model shift in some cases, but an opportunity.
So. Well, you were right. We should have kicked off a day one coverage with this. It's been fascinating. Reese, really grateful for your wisdom and sharing some thoughts with us. Before we let you go, should anyone have any questions of you and want to learn more about the work at Bluefield, where do they go?
They go to www.bluefieldresearch.com.
That's the place to go. Reese Tisdale, the president of Bluefield Research. Real pleasure to have you. Thanks again for stopping by and sharing some insights.
My pleasure, guys. Great to see you.
All right. That's all the time we have for today. In fact, that wraps our Day 2 coverage. On behalf of myself and all of us at Water Talk, thank you for tuning in and listening. To learn more about us and catch more of our episodes, visit us at wateronline.com. All right. We're signing off from Day 2 in Denver at ACE 19. We look forward to seeing you again right here tomorrow. We'll see you then.